Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, so we got some interesting conversations that's been going on and around the Super Bowl and also here in Tampa on quarterbacks and quarterback play, which I'd like to get into. And first and foremost, Steve, I had a chance to talk to Bruce Arians. Now, you know, he's going to have his event. He has one coming up at the Hard Rock Cafe. And, you know, this is the one to for the Arians Family Foundation. You know, they help people help with foster kids and different things, kids that have been, you know, victims of abuse and stuff. They do a great job with that, and they've had a golf tournament. They said they'll still probably play golf sometime in the spring, but they're going to do this, and there's some VIP tickets available. You get a lot of things with that, and we'll tell you how to navigate that and where to go in just a minute. But that was the reason why I had a chance to talk to him, and he was kind of making the media tour. But more importantly, we got on the subject of quarterbacks, and I'll take it in the order I wrote it because, you know, Bruce has always been one to study quarterbacks. I mean, he, you know, wrote The Quarterback Whisperer. We know the quarterbacks that he has coached in the past. It's a pretty star-studded list. And so, you know, that's sort of his domain. And as the assistant to Jason Light, the senior assistant, this has kind of been what he's done each draft, even going back as far as when he was the head coach. But so he's doing work on people. And I thought it was interesting because this is as deep a draft, he told me, of quarterbacks that he's ever seen. I mean, he said, I've been in this league a long time. I've never seen this many good guys that can play, right? Guys that have a chance to really, you know, play in this league and be good. He said it really is a deep draft. And one of those players, and we don't know where he's going to go. I think the scouting combine will have a lot to do with that with the medicals. But we know him well from Tampa Bay Tech, of course, Washington quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. If there's one guy that's a Bruce Arians guy, it's this dude because he says he can absolutely drop back and zing it, which is what I like to do, is throw the ball down the field. Loves his accuracy, everything like that. But there's no really way of knowing exactly, you know, where Penix is going to go because he's suffered through so many different injuries. He had, you know, he tore his ACL in 2018 and 2020. He's had shoulder injuries and 19 and 21. We saw him get hurt in the national championship game as well, and he kind of stuck it out with a bad ankle. But they're going to go up there to Indianapolis here in a couple weeks, and he's going to be, you know, poked and prodded. And I assure you that there will be stories that will be written, not necessarily by me, but maybe by me, of, you know, doctors leaking information or teams more specifically leaking information that, oh, Michael Penix, you know, Jr., he would be great, but those medicals, man, whew, you better watch that because, you know, those knees aren't good, that shoulder's not good. And in some cases it might be true, but more than likely it will be from teams putting out word like that to hope that Penix falls in the draft to where they're going, where they're picking, and that they can kind of like nick him up a little bit and get him to fall. I don't know what will happen as far as the Bucs go. I mean, they're picking pretty late in the draft as it is. I don't necessarily see them with their needs going for a quarterback in the first round, but you don't know because, again, as I said, one of the deepest quarterback drafts that there has been.
Well, if the guy you really like falls,
you got to take him.
You know, whether it's Penix or say you like, you know, name your quarterback. I mean, mm-hmm. In a quarterback rich draft, you don't know which ones could fall.
Right.
Because there's a lot of quarterbacks guys like, whether it's, you know, Bo Nix or mm-hmm. J.J. McCarthy. I mean, you know, we're pretty sure Caleb Williams and Drake May are going really high.
Right.
But you've got a lot of other quarterbacks in this draft, so.
Yeah, the kid from Tulane is good. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a lot. You're right. There is a deep quarterback draft. And why would you wait for another draft when it's not as deep to address mm-hmm. the position, right?
Yeah, particularly if a guy you think should be a top 15 pick, let's say, and you're sitting at, what, 25, 20, whatever they're picking.
Right.
You know, mid-20s, and he's still there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about it at that point.
Yeah.
For that position.
And it doesn't matter to me whether you have Baker Mayfield, you don't have Baker Mayfield. That's inconsequential because you're always looking for the next dude and you need him on the roster and you're always trying to upgrade that position. I've said this before. I mean, we're looking at Mr. Irrelevant, you know, that just took the San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl. He lost. But that guy, they had already taken and spent three number ones on Trey Lance. They had Jimmy Garoppolo for a while. You know, they took a flyer on a guy and kind of just stashed him on the roster, and he turned out to be their best quarterback and may be their quarterback for the foreseeable future. So, you know, to me, the position is so important that I don't know why out of seven picks, you know, seven rounds, you wouldn't take one every year and hope that maybe you get a Brock Purdy. There's not too many Tom Brady's in the sixth round, but you never know. I mean, Russell Wilson went in the third or fourth. I mean, it does happen. But Penix could go anywhere, I think. I mean, I have seen him in some mocks as high as one, but most of them now are dropping him between two and four. And I think all that's medical. I don't necessarily think that it's, although he wasn't very good in the national championship, he did get nicked up a little bit too. And you got to credit Michigan's defense, which is really, really good. But, you know, even what he's been through physically, like I asked Bruce about this, is what is it, you know, I don't know. If you tore one ACL, you come back from that, but then you tear it again. I don't know, man. I don't know if everybody is mentally tough enough to, you know, to endure that rehab twice. Then you have the shoulder injuries twice. He said, you know what? I think that says everything about the kid, how tough he is to overcome all that. And he said, and then to play like he did last year, he goes, now, you know, the medical experts, when you get to the combine, they're going to tug and pull and do all that stuff, and you're going to get the medical grade. But as far as the football grade, he says, I love him because he does things that I love to do. He puts it up the field. Mm-hmm. And he says he's accurate on throws up the field as anyone I've seen in 15 years. Now, that's saying something. And just to fight through that last game after he had a bad ankle tore up, you know, what he did to Texas when they, you know, they beat him 37-31 in the Sugar Bowl, he said was unbelievable. So, you know, this is somebody that obviously from here, from, you know, Tampa Bay Tech, and would be wildly popular choice, I would think. Great story anyway, guy coming home from Dade City to the Buccaneers. But, and there's a lot of Michael Penix, you know, teams out there, I would imagine, that like him. It's just a question of how much do you like him? Where do you like him enough to take him in the first round? Do you like him enough to trade up in the second round? Where do you think he's going to be slotted? Are you accurate about that? You know, and all of that will matter. He's a good kid. We know that. He's a winner. He's won at a very high level and led his team. And in those games against Oregon, he was crazy, crazy accurate. And so, you know, this is not that you advertise every guy you like, but this is just an example of what the Bucs could do in the draft. And I think they'd be remiss if they didn't. Look, Kyle Trask is in his final year under contract. And, you know, I think I've mentioned this before on this podcast, but they were telling offensive line candidates, you know, that, well, and not knowing what Baker's future is for sure, no one can be sure, obviously, because it's his choice as a free agent. But they were saying, yeah, we really like Kyle Trask. In fact, you could even say that, you know, Baker's 1A and Kyle is 1B. Well, they may have to say that just because that might be their quarterback, you know, but it's in his final season. You know, this is the last year for him. He will become a free agent. So even if somehow Baker Mayfield wasn't here and you'd said, you know what, we're going with Trask, we're going to find out what this guy's got, you know, all chips to the middle of the table on Kyle Trask, he's still not signed after this year. You have to address the position. Yeah, you have John Wolford and you know, that might help a little bit just in terms of depth. But, you know, there's really not that starting guy, which is why it's so important for them to get Mayfield back. And, you know, I talked to Bruce about Mayfield, and, you know, he said that they know he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, but he kind of feels the way I do. He says, look, he loves it here, and the job he did, you know, with Todd and a new coordinator and new play caller and, you know, all the ups and downs, you know, to see everything kind of unfold that way, you know, and put it together, it was pretty impressive. And, you know, it just seems like the money will be part of it, but I'm a believer that the Bucks have made that decision, because I think, and when I say that, I mean there's no way they can be sure of it unless they franchise him, and you know, we won't know for a while if they're going to use that tag on him or Antoine Winfield Jr. or somebody else. But for for Cohen to come in here and leave his job at Kentucky, he's not here, as he said, by accident. You know, he's here because he coached Baker Mayfield. And for him to come here, there has to be sort of a acknowledgement that, no, we're give me a percentage, 85, 90% sure, one way or the other. You could say 100 if you're willing to franchise him, but there has to be some acknowledgement that he's going to stay here. We're going to make it possible. We kind of know what it's going to take, you know, financially. And I think it's going to take every bit of $35 million a year. And that sounds like a lot. And it is a ton of money, especially when he was making four last year. But really, because the salary cap keeps going up, when you see the contracts of guys like Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa and these guys that'll be coming up for free agency, $35 million will look like a below, you know, mid-tier level. I mean, the guys are going to be signing Dak Prescott and them for $60, $65 million. Because the salary cap keeps going up and the revenues are so good. So, you know, we're going to have to kind of get away from the sticker shock. But I think they know, you know, that they're going to be able to make him happy. And he is happy here in Tampa. And then it'll be, you know, kind of a race to try to see if you can then get Mike Evans. You know, can you fit him under the cap? And I think that that's the next piece. And, you know, Bruce has no doubt. He says, you know, Evans has shown no signs of slowing down. We know what he did last year. And, you know, again, he thinks that Mike wants to stay here. But he says, you know, he says, I don't think there's going to be any doubt that he'll continue to play well, especially if we're fortunate to keep him and Baker together, because they've got such a good rapport already. And he goes, I don't see that there's any downside to Mike at all, and that he might even get better. Which is a scary thing. So, you know, good discussion. Check it out on TampaBay.com, Tampa Bay Times. Bruce Arians talking about quarterbacks. Again, his Arians Family Foundation, they're getting ready to celebrate their 10th anniversary. There's going to be an exclusive live concert featuring Jason Aldean, March 23rd. That's at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa. There's a limited number of tickets on sale and the VIP sponsorship packages as well. And you can go to ArianSFamilyFoundation.com. You know, all these proceeds go to CASA, which is the court-appointed special advocates, and the Florida Guardian Ad Litem, and all of that. So it's a really, really worthwhile event, and big time entertainment there as well. And then his annual golf tournament they'll probably do a little bit later on in the spring once they find out what the player schedule is. So. Interesting. I'd be okay. You know, I if I'm a Bucks fan, and not just because of the local ties, but I think it'd be probably a you know, a good situation, regardless of who the young quarterback is. If you had a Baker Mayfield, Steve, for 3 years, and you know what Baker has been through, and you know what he brings, right, to that locker room and the leadership and the moxie, that would be a good guy to follow as a young guy who can sit behind him for, what, 2, maybe 3 years? You know, depending on where you draft him. Obviously, if you take him in the first round, he's probably going to force his way in there sooner. But that would be a tremendous sort of combination.
Well, you'd hope he'd force his way in there sooner. I mean, that's ultimately, if you're drafting a young quarterback and you have a veteran, whether it's Alex Smith in Kansas City,
yeah,
you know, you name it, Baker Mayfield here in Tampa, if that's the case,
mm-hmm.
You hope that first-round pick is forcing their way onto the field.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
But if not, you've got time. And I mean, that's, to steal a phrase from Buccaneers coaches, that's a champagne problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a veteran quarterback that got you to the playoffs last year, won a division title, and you think can be better in year two, and mm-hmm. you've got a rookie quarterback that's pushing for playing time to push them out of the way, that's a champagne problem. That's a good problem to have.
You know, and you know who's done it better than anybody is the Green Bay Packers. I mean, mm-hmm. they had Brett Favre. They drafted Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how Rodgers got as low as he did. But they drafted Aaron Rodgers, and he sat behind Brett Favre for all those years. And then when Aaron got his turn, he was ready, And then Aaron Rodgers had it for like 15 years. And then they had Jordan Love on the bench for 3 years, and they turned it over to him. And look what Jordan Love has become this past year. So you can't always be that successful with your choices, but in terms of like that used to be the old way, right, where guys would sit and learn and not be pressed to play right away. But you're right. If you draft a guy, you want him to force his way in there. I just think, you know, Baker is a good teammate. He's somebody that, you know, some quarterbacks I think are that interested in teaching the guy how to take his job. But I think you could learn a lot from him. And so, yeah, it might be a good situation. Either way, I think they have to take a quarterback somewhere in this draft. They don't have to, but I think they will definitely consider it heavily just because Trask is in his final year. So, you know, you got John Wolford on a contract, you have Trask on a contract, and nobody else.
Well, I don't think if you're not taking a quarterback in the first or second round,
mm-hmm.
like, are you drafting for a backup quarterback for a year or two from now? Like, isn't
probably
that kind of what they did with Kyle Trask? I don't know if they really
took Kyle in the second round. I think
it was the last pick of the second round. It was almost a third round pick.
Almost a third round. But I think their thought was we don't have to play him right away, and that's what we don't want to do is have to play him. We got the GOAT.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he's always been kind of a slow and steady wins the race guy, whether it was high school where he didn't start or at Florida when he was behind Felipe Franks for a while. And then when he got his chance, he ripped it. And that was kind of the mantra was like, hey, we're bringing him in because we want him to eventually maybe be our starter, but we know he's not ready. And the great thing is that he can learn from the greatest of all time. And by the time he retires, and he ended up retiring twice, by the time he retires, then we'll turn to this guy and maybe we'll have something, you know? Yeah, he's not a first round pick, but they still had a plan for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that plan, because Tom came back out of retirement, was kind of delayed a year. And then they went out and got Baker Mayfield, who frankly beat them out, you know, if you want to call that a competition. I think, frankly, the minute they signed Baker Mayfield, they knew he was going to be the starter, and he was. But to this point, yeah, Kyle hasn't been able to do it. So maybe that wasn't a great – if that was your plan for him to then become the starter, it hasn't happened. And, you know, but how low – like if Penix went top of the third round, are you telling me that – you know, he wouldn't want to see him in the lineup in 2 years?
My point is, and I don't, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's second or third or fourth round. To take a quarterback every year sounds like a good plan, right?
Until you have,
because
other
it's
needs.
The most important position. Well, but it's the most important position. But if you're taking a guy who you don't think can be a bona fide NFL starter, then it's a wasted pick. Now, I don't know what they. I assume they thought Kyle Trask had the potential to be a starter when they took him. To take him at the end of the second round, I don't mean step in day one. I'm saying
it was no guarantee. That was their hope, you know.
You know, just taking a quarterback this year because Kyle Trask's contract's up after this year and you might need another backup is not a good reason to take a quarterback. If you think there's potential for the guy, and you may miss, and it looks like at this point that's what they've done with Kyle Trask. Although it's not to say he can not be a starter. He just hasn't beaten out Tom Brady and Baker Mayfield to this point. But, you know, I think you can find linebackers in the third and fourth round that are serviceable and can play special teams in this, and maybe they become starters. And, you know, that's kind of third and fourth round may not be fair. Maybe fifth or sixth at that point. But with quarterbacks, like, if you don't think they have it, don't just take one to take one. If that makes sense. And I'm not saying the Bucs did that. But I don't think you go in going, well, every year we should take a quarterback, so let's take one.
Yeah, well, nobody does that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a GM, so I'd probably be stupid if I did it. But I think if you don't have the guy and you're not sure of where he's coming from, there's a lot of avenues, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's interesting is the two Super Bowls the Bucs won, they didn't win with guys they drafted. And in fact, I don't know, other than Tom Brady, that any quarterback is you know, kind of made it to another contract or whatnot. Like, it just doesn't happen. You know, like, especially the guys they draft have never done that, in the first rounders in particular. And this whole franchise is steeped in history of failed first-round draft picks at quarterback. They've just never been able to get the right guy or develop him or whatever to where you could have him for more than 4 or 5 years. And the last one being Jameis Winston. So, you know, Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl. He was a free agent. Tom Brady, obviously, you know, played 20 years in New England or whatever. So, you know, the success they've had as a franchise has not been with people they developed. So maybe you just say, screw it, we'll go get somebody else's quarterback, because it seems to have worked for them. But I do think that there is probably a heightened interest this year. And a lot of it depends on Baker. I mean, look, if you know you got Baker for 3 years, there's not an incredible – I think it's more about the draft, Steve. I think you hit it on the head when we first started this talk. It's like, look, if this draft is what Arians and others are saying about the depth of talent at that position, well, then unless you have that position locked down, you'd be remiss not to address it in this draft.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is with so many quarterbacks available in this draft that people think have good potential – you know, it's curious what the free agent market's going to look like for quarterbacks.
Right.
Which happens before the draft.
Right.
And it also means if there's enough of the quarterbacks in this draft, then how many veteran quarterbacks are going to be released come training camp or come OTAs in that? Because a lot of teams are going to take in rookie quarterbacks this year they're going to keep on their roster.
Yep.
And so, you know, whether they were starters or backups, but they're more veteran quarterbacks at this point. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a glut of that hit the market in May or August,
mm-hmm.
after the draft. And so
yeah.
it's going to be interesting how the free agent quarterback market goes in March.
I think that with so many draft picks that people like at the position, it's probably going to dampen it. It's probably going to hurt the backup quarterback market in terms of what they can get in terms of salary and stuff. But there are a number of names out there still, and teams will be looking at that. You know, and it was interesting because you mentioned like how Andrea Kramer, who's a friend of mine, and of course we've known her for years on HBO Real Sports, which is no longer in business, I'm afraid, but she's on the NFL Network. You see her all the time. She did a thing before the Super Bowl on CBS, and she talked to Bruce Arians, Aaron Rodgers, and Steve Young about the quarterback position, you know, in advance of what was happening in the Super Bowl and also the draft that's coming up. And she sort of asked them to sort of give what their thoughts are on the state of quarterbacking in the NFL right now, because I think a record number of guys started games last year. It was over 60, maybe even as high as 70-something quarterbacks, different quarterbacks played. And her simple question was, what does that say to you? And from Rodgers and some others, and I'll summarize here, they go that you know, the state of the position, of the quarterback position, is crappy, to use a euphemism, and then you get into all the whys about that, and we've talked about it a little bit on this podcast. But you know, in Tom Brady, who I think is going to be phenomenal, he was on his podcast the other day. I think he's gonna be a really good broadcaster, by the way. And he started talking about the position, and he said, you know, and I never heard it explained quite this way, but he said when the play call comes in, it's really not a play. It's just a guess. That's all it is. Here's our best guess against what we think they're going to show you on defense. If we jump into this formation, if we go, you know, 11 personnel, 12 personnel, whatever we're doing, we think we're going to get it. So we think this play will work against what we think they will give you on defense. That's all it is. And he goes, and, you know, the good quarterbacks, what am I going to do? So you got a bunch of, you know, shallow crosses against cover two. I know when I go up to the line of scrimmage, if I run this play, it's not going to work against this defense. It's the wrong defense for me to get a guy open. But if I'm young and inexperienced, right, and I don't have enough time in my mind or on the play clock to change the play and get us into the play that's going to work against this coverage, short of calling timeout, he says, what you see today is they snap the ball, they drop back, nobody's open because it doesn't work against the coverage they're called. They take off and run for 8 yards, and everybody says, wow, what a great play by that quarterback. What a dual threat. How nice is it to have a guy that can run? And he goes, but that's not playing the position. You know, that's not really helping your team, because a lot of bad things can happen when you run. He goes, but that's sort of what quarterbacks have become. And a lot of it, and we've talked about this, is that, you know, they don't read defenses. They got giant cards on the sideline. They never huddle up. You know, guys, a lot of players, until they get to the league, haven't even spit out a play in a huddle. They haven't been in a huddle, right, much less talked it through and had to process things. I just think that the state of the game at that position, because, you know, from high schools on up, they're getting the best athletes, and these guys are, you know, running around, and some are throwing, you know, some of them can throw, but they don't win from the pocket as much. This is what you're getting, and it's not as good a quality of player as there used to be. And I sound like the old man, you know, in my day, all the quarterbacks were Dan Marino, but that was not true. But I do think there's something to be said for, you know, what quality of player you're getting at that position in the NFL, and is that why a Patrick Mahomes stands out as much as he mm-hmm. does?
I go back, and I know I've said this on this podcast before, but it was when Brady came to Tampa, or shortly after, Bill Belichick was asked about Tom Brady mm-hmm. and what made him so good. And he said early in his career, and I couldn't tell you if it was before the first Super Bowl or right around that, but it was early in his career.
Yeah.
He said there was a play that was supposed to, you know, be a slant to the receiver on the right side, and it was third down and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Brady drops back and ends up throwing it to the left side to, you know, out of bounds. You know, fourth down, punt the ball, live to play another series.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to the sideline, and Bill Belichick says, "What happened?" And Brady says, "Well, the left tackle slipped, so then the edge rusher got around him, and then this receiver did this, and this happened this, and the safety moved here, and da-da-da." And he went through eight things, he said.
In 2 seconds.
And so, and Belichick just goes, "Okay, you know, go to the bench, whatever, you know." He's calling the defense, special teams, you know. It's, okay, you had a reason, you know, you gave me a reason. Said, I go back after the game and I watch the tape. And all eight things that he told me happened in the exact order it happened in that 1.5, 2 seconds.
Wow.
And so Brady, instead of throwing the ball there, ended up throwing the ball to the left and throw it out of bounds and let's move on to another day.
Wow.
And that's what elite quarterbacking is.
Like, it's processing information. Mm-hmm. It's how quickly you can process it and get the ball on time to the right guy.
And it's the ultimate team sport where the left tackle slipping started the whole process of, well, now this now the edge rusher got further than he was supposed to get on this play, or than I think he's going to get by this point when I need to be at this point in my drop back. And I don't remember all the specifics, but it was boom, 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 and it was eight of them, I remember he said. And, you know, sure enough, when he told the coach coming off the sideline, that's exactly what happened.
And you mentioned the other day there was a play, and Tony Romo may have said what happened, but, like, Brock Purdy had a guy open, but for – They had a breakdown, and he had to throw the ball a little too soon.
Well, no, he had the guy he wanted, one-on-one coverage on the right, but he didn't have his protection right. And instead of changing the protection to keep the matchup, he called timeout.
Oh, I see. So he had the player open, and then he didn't.
He had a guy isolated one-on-one, that the matchup you like. I think it was McCaffrey, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it could have been somebody else. But he had a matchup that you really liked.
McCaffrey on a linebacker or a safety.
Yeah, you really liked, and he panicked and called timeout instead of, let me change the protection here. And you got 5 seconds. It was 6 seconds or something. You have time to change the protection at that point.
Right.
To keep that matchup you want.
Yeah, young guy trying to process things in real time and missed an opportunity, you know, to hit the hot and make a big play. So, yeah, that's you know, It's the hardest to me, I don't know, and maybe it's more instinctive than thinking, but, like, hockey goaltender and NFL quarterback to me are the two hardest positions to play at the major league or NFL or NHL level. I just think, you know, and quarterbacking is, you know, kind of a lost art. I mean, we've lost a lot of good quarterbacks over the last dozen years or so, or even less than that. And now you see Mahomes is head and shoulders above anybody out there. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, maybe some guys will emerge. You know, maybe Josh Allen gets there.
Yeah.
We see his skill set, but he hasn't taken his team, you know, to a Super Bowl yet. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow certainly has that ability, and he has taken his team to a Super Bowl.
I think Trevor Lawrence has a chance.
Trevor Lawrence has a chance. I mean, there's some dudes, you know. I mean, even Tua Tagovailoa at times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Looks like that guy, right?
I'll be curious if Justin Herbert can take another step under Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, with Harbaugh, I think he'll be terrific. Yeah, I think Jim will get the most out of him, and I think Jim's going to have a running game and some physicality that's going to help the Chargers and help him because he's an absolute stud. So there's young guys.
CJ Stroud looks like he could be one.
Yeah, absolutely. CJ had an unbelievable rookie year, and it didn't look too big for him, and he read things out very well, and he got the ball out of his hands. So maybe it's not as dire. We'll have to see. But for right now, you know.
I think we're in a lull. I am curious to see how these young quarterbacks we just all mentioned, how they do progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Mahomes is by far the king right now. And and we've talked about this year. I mean, he did it with less talent this year.
Oh, it was more impressive than any year he's had. And he said that too. He goes, I think this one means the most to me because of where we came from, you know, because of what we had on this team. Look, and I'm not going to try to knock this guy. You know, he was my neighbor, but Donovan Smith was terrible in this game. They won a Super Bowl with Donovan Smith at left tackle. Gave up, I think, two sacks and another pressure and had a holding penalty, like, you know, what you would have expected when Donovan Smith left here. He also has another ring, you know, because Mahomes was able to live with that somehow because he processes things so quickly and he can make plays anyway. That was not a great offensive line. They didn't have a lot of weapons around him outside of Kelsey. You know, the receiver or two would make an occasional play. I mean, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, certainly, you know, guy we're familiar with here. You know, Justin Watson, who, you know, was like on the practice squad at one point in Tampa Bay, has made some big catches for them. But they don't have any Tyreek Hills out there anymore. And for what Mahomes was able to do, I think, Steve, you went 8 of his last 8 passing. He had a run for about 25 or 26 yards, threw a touchdown. I mean, that last drive was, and I don't have the stat in front of me, but it was as, if you take all those things together, the 8 of 8, the number of yards he passed for, the big chunk run that he had, and the touchdown, no one has done that, I think, in the playoffs or regular season on a final drive in some time or
yeah,
if at all.
Yeah, it was 8 for 8 or better and 27 yards rushing or more. I don't think it's ever been done before. You know,
yeah, which is just crazy. Yeah. In overtime, in a Super Bowl, you put together something that hasn't been done, and you did it on the biggest stage in the biggest moment and won your third Lombardi trophy. That is something no one else can touch right now in the game. And maybe those guys we talked about will get there, but they're not there yet, you know. And I think Mahomes is right when he said, hey, we're just getting started. You know, I believe that this Kansas City team is going to get better because they've had to go through some – I don't know what their salary cap situation is and, you know, and all of that or who they can draft. And obviously you're going to be picking last in each round. But there's still plenty of talent. And if that guy is under center, you got a chance every single year. And he's still only 28 years old. So, you know, before it's all said and done, maybe he will run Brady down. It's going to be a hard ask, but he certainly is knocking on Joe Montana's door, you know, depending on, you know, who you like in that. If you're going to just look at rings and things, I think Bradshaw, you know, he won 4, but the first two, it was really, they were waving those terrible towels for the defense, not for the offense. You know, and he didn't have as big a role. The next 2 years they did because they changed the rules were because of Jack Tatum. You couldn't hold, you know, bump guys after 5 yards. And then it became a, you know, more of a passing situation. But, yeah, to me, Brady, obviously, number one. I still think Montana is number two in my book. And then I'll give it to Mahomes at 3 right now.
Well, number 3 at this point, that's huge.
Yeah, he's 28.
I can't really argue with it.
I mean, you know, everybody has a flair. I mean, you're talking about, you know, and it's not fair to just judge on Super Bowls, but, like, you're saying he's better than Dan Marino. You're saying he's better than John Elway. Like, those are names that, whoa, you know, in some people's houses are like, that's the best quarterback I ever saw, you know. And you get it. Johnny Unitas, right? Guys like that. Like, those are – and it's hard to compare eras because of the, you know, the style of play, the rules, and just all of that, right? But that's what we do, and I think there's always recency bias and stuff like that. But I think Mahomes is that good, and he proved it this year because he did it when nothing was perfect. Absolutely nothing was perfect.
And I think he's shown he's head and shoulders above everybody else in his generation. You know, I think that's part of the – when you factor in the greatest of all time discussions or who's better, especially when you go across – generations in that where the play is different and you know, everything about it's different is how dominant were you compared to everybody else?
It's a good point.
In your era. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I think Barry Bonds may be the greatest baseball player. I mean, Babe Ruth probably is. Barry Bonds may be second. Because who was even close to him in his generation?
Right.
You know, you look at his career in that. I mean, Babe Ruth was so far ahead of everybody because nobody hit home runs and he did.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at Mahomes and the quarterbacks around him, I mean, Josh Allen's good, Lamar Jackson's good, Joe Burrow's good, but I mean, he has shown he is head and shoulders above them at this point.
Absolutely.
And, no. You know, Tom Brady, while he competed with the Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Mannings and Eli's and that, I mean, although Eli did beat him twice in the Super Bowl, but, you know, his career, you look at it, he showed he was by far the best quarterback of that group as far as winning championships and getting there. And, you know, I mean, I kind of look at that when you start taking in the greatest, you know, debate of, you know, where you rank.
Yeah, how you compare the eras. And, and Super Bowls matter. I think they matter with quarterbacks. They don't matter with everybody else. But I think with quarterbacks, just like with Peyton Manning for years and years, and I used to have this discussion with Tom Jones. And Tom would always say, no, I can't put him in the greatest, well, among the greatest of all time. He's not in my top five. He may not even be in my top 10. I said, come on. Come on. Not in your top 10. Are you kidding me? I know what I see. I see Peyton Manning. He's got one Super Bowl. Well, and this is kind of a Lombardi bias, but like then he goes to Denver and he throws 50 touchdowns or something like that. But then the next year, you know, the neck is still a problem and his arm is getting weaker and all this. And he winds up winning a Super Bowl, but he's a passenger. The defense is the thing, you know, and they beat the hell out of Carolina and he goes 3 of 13 on third down, but he's got a ring. And then all of a sudden Tom says, okay, now you can put him in the best of all time. I'm like, wait a minute. So he goes 3 of 13 on third down, but now that he has a second ring, he's in a different. Yep, in my book, he is. Yep, he's better than Elway, or he's, you know, he's as good or better than Elway. He's better than Marino. He's better than all these guys that only have one ring. That's kind of the way he wanted to look at it. So to each his own. All right, we got one mailbag question that kind of relates to this. We'll get to that here in just a second because it does discuss the Chiefs and what we just saw. I want to remind you guys, though, that for the past 14 years, the skilled pros of May Electric Solar have been installing solar energy systems in Florida. Now they provide the most reliable solar equipment, the best installation methods and service, while helping homeowners cut energy costs with an environmentally friendly investment. May Electric Solar uses their own skilled employees, never subcontractors. They've always offered the safest and most reliable equipment. Well, now May Electric Solar offers a 30-year no-cost equipment replacement and labor warranty. That means for 30 years, May Electric Solar, backed by Solar Insure, means that your roof, your electrical equipment replacement is all covered. Now, Solar Insure even survives May Electric Solar. It's owned by the homeowner with no deductions or additional fees, and this policy will transfer to new homeowners with no fee. It's not a blanket insurance policy. In fact, only the best contractors are allowed to be part of its program. May Electric Solar's reputation and history of workmanship has earned them this membership. To learn more about May Electric Solar's installation and their 30-year warranty, call 727-819-2862 or visit mayelectricsolar.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we have one more question that kind of is on topic a little bit.
Michael tweeted us. He says, is it more remarkable now that the Bucs beat the Chiefs in the middle of their Super Bowl dynasty?
You know, I do. I think it is. I think when they look back and, you know, you're comparing Patrick Mahomes to the GOAT, to Tom Brady, well, that's who he lost the Super Bowl to, you know. And they had it wasn't their first. You know, they had already beaten the San Francisco 49ers the year before in Miami. So they were trying to go back to back then, and you know it hadn't happened until the other day for like 20 years. And I remember, you know, that team was really explosive. In fact, they came into Tampa Bay. That's when Tyreek Hill went off and had, you know, three touchdowns. I think he had over 200 yards in the first quarter. Todd Bowles was, you know, unbelievably trying to, you know, play press man against these guys and not play zone and cover two and all that. And so for the way they played, now it wound up being a 3-point game on the scoreboard, probably wasn't as close as that during the regular season. Then when they saw him again in the Super Bowl, the Bucs were able to flip the script, especially on defense. They rushed four. Guys like JPP and Ndamukong Suh got home with, you know, Shaq Barrett. And, you know, it was really something to watch. And so they were able to play. Then they went to a, you know, cover two situation, and they really frustrated Mahomes and Hill and everybody. Although Mahomes still, you know, ran for almost 500 yards around the field. They tracked him as far as that goes, GPS wise. But he made the damnedest throws and one hit, you know, Tyreek Hill in the face mask that he could have caught for a touchdown. And, you know, he's throwing from odd angles and stuff, but they did not allow a single touchdown, which is remarkable against that Mahomes offense. They were prolific scorers that year, and nobody thought that they could keep them out of the end zone, and they did. So, you know, having won a Super Bowl, gotten back the next year, playing well. Now, their offensive line wasn't good, you know, and I don't think it's much better now. But a lot of those guys, because of injuries or whatnot, were not starters at the beginning of the year. And the Bucs, you know, just rushed four and played coverage all day, and they were able to get home. So the offensive line wasn't good, but Mahomes had a terrific year. And I think, you know, to me, even though the game was at Raymond James, I kind of went into it thinking, you know what, these guys are defending champions, and they've been in this game most recently. Even though Tom has been in a million of them, it just felt different. But, man, the Bucs went out there and handled their business, especially on defense. And I do think it was an impressive win because I think that was a really good Chiefs team. And maybe, you know, maybe the offensive line is marginally better this year, but not much better. I mean, Donovan Smith didn't play particularly well. He gave up a bunch of pressures and sacks and things like that. So, yeah, and that's, you know, that's the second of four Super Bowls that they have been to since 2019. I think you got to give the Bucs a lot of credit for, and that was a really talented Bucs team. In fact, I think, trying to think who said this on air, it would surprise you. I can't remember, but it was an NFL player, may have played for the Chiefs. Wasn't Kelsey. It could have been somebody like that that said, oh, man, that Tampa Bay team that we lost to, you know, in the Super Bowl was maybe the most talented team I've ever played against. And, you know, just in terms of, like, you look at the names on there and you go, okay, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, right, Chris Godwin, Leonard Fournette, like, you know, there were a lot of dudes, Rob Gronkowski. There's a lot of dudes on that team that played a lot of football and a lot of postseasons, and they put it all together when they needed to, going on the road and winning all those games. But, yeah, good question. I do think they get credit for it. And, you know, hey, you know, some other team has to start showing up in the Super Bowl again. I don't know if it'd be Tampa Bay, but this is some kind of run, which I don't think it's going to stop. I think Kansas City – if you look at that division, maybe the Chargers get better. I don't know that the Raiders are going to get better anytime past. I don't know what Denver's going to do with Sean Payton. They could dominate that division for some time. Hey, that's all the time we have for today for the mailbag question. We'll get to a bunch of them tomorrow. If you guys want to send them in, you can do that on Twitter at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter at NFLStroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Going to be over at One Buck Place later today. One of the world's largest flag football tournaments is about to start here in Tampa, and it's also going to become an Olympic sport. And there's a panel discussion later this afternoon that includes Troy Vincent from the NFL that we'll be into, so we'll see what's going on over there. And baseball, Steve Versnick is just around the corner. I'm reading Mark Tompkin on Sunday. I'm fired up.
Pitchers and catchers report tomorrow. Happy Valentine's Day tomorrow.
Absolutely. Oh, so, man, is it Valentine's Day? Yeah, I got so, nothing.
Yeah, you got 24 hours. Ooh. Or, well, that's, you know, not 36 good. Maybe, depending on what
I'm
time
that
you're
guy. Yeah. Yeah, I'm that guy.
Yeah. And the Lightning back in action tonight. They'll wrap up their 4-game road trip in Boston.
Big one against the Bruins. Chance to get two more points on this road trip, which would be four. And
Bruins are coming that. Off maybe their worst game of the season. Their first shutout loss of the season was at home. They had a lengthy practice on Monday. I don't think coaches was very happy. So we'll see how they respond.
Well, yeah, and the Lightning need to keep it going because they had that, you know, great finish to the first half before the All-Star break, and then they stubbed their toe and lost a couple, and then now 2 points in this last game. So against Columbus, if they can come home with a point or two, that would certainly be great.
We might see the return of Tanner Janot tonight too. So they had hoped that he would play on this road trip. He's with them. This was the last game of the road trip, so
there you go.
No announcement yet, but hopefully he'll play tonight. If not, then maybe you see him Thursday or Saturday.
All righty. We'll look forward to that. All right. Thanks for listening, as always. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.